Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast. It seems only a short moment ago I was saying those very words into this very microphone. In fact, it is. I think this could be the first time that we've had two Arscasts in one day, and the Arscast I put out this morning, I don't think, even with football, you do one on a Friday, this game on a Saturday, the shelf life of a podcast in that sense is quite short. I don't think there's ever been one with a shelf life as short as this one, because I put it up this morning at about 6:30 a.m. and by 10 a.m. Arsene Wenger had announced that he was going to be leaving the club at the end of the season. Man, that is a bolt from the blue, a real shock, it has to be said. Not necessarily that this is Arsene Wenger's last season. I've long suspected that that might be the case, but the announcement of it just out of the blue on a Friday morning was really, really unexpected. So we're reacting. We're going to talk a bit about Arsene's decision, the announcement, what it means for the club, where we go from here, Ivan Gazidis' press conference and all kinds of things. In a few minutes' time, I'm going to be talking to Andrew Allen, Gunnar Holick, and the man from East Lower. Jim will be here as well. We're going to have a bit of a roundtable discussion about that. And in a couple of seconds' time, I'm going to be talking to James from Gunnar Blog. He was at the Ivan Gazidis press conference, so I'll talk to him about that. But I just wanted to share something with you. The phone rang off the hook today. Lots of messages, lots of radio stations, etc., podcasts looking for reaction to it. And I was on News Talk Radio in Ireland. It's the biggest talk radio station in Ireland. Their drive time show presented by a man called Ivan Yates. I was on with John Giles, the former Republic of Ireland player and manager. I do think, though, that this particular interaction has to be one of the highlights of my broadcasting career. I'm going to play it for you now.
Well, for reaction to the news, it's a pleasure to welcome to the programme my old mucker and great analyst, of course, here on the station, John Giles, football pundit, and Andrew Mangan of, I'm not sure about this title, Arsblog, joining me now. Andrew, where'd you get the Arsblog from?
Well, it's a blog about Arsenal. What else would you call it?
Well, you could stick in an N or something, or make it the Gooners or something. Arse blog. Okay. First of all, what is the general reaction, Andrew? Today is it
one? So that's my latest appearance on Irish National Radio. Probably my last one on that particular show. But who knows? Who knows? Anyway, let's get on with the show. And Ivan Gazidis had a press conference a bit earlier on. He gave a statement, and then he sort of didn't answer any questions. And with me to discuss that, because he was there, is James from Gunnerblog. James, good evening.
Good evening to you. How are you doing? I've got a drink in hand. I think it's necessary. This has been quite the day.
Yeah, it really has. Let me ask you first and foremost, what was your reaction when the news dropped this morning?
Well, I think for all Arsenal fans, it's going to be one of those where were you moments. I was actually on a train at the time, so I was completely unaware that there'd been a bit of a whisper going around, a little bit of a rumour kind of in the hour or so before. And I actually got a phone call from my brother, and he just said, "Have you heard?" And I didn't know. I thought it could have been news about the family, could have been anything. And he said, "Oh, Arsene Wenger's going at the end of the season." And I was really stunned. This caught me out of the blue, really, out of left field. You know, despite us talking about it on the podcast week in, week out as a possibility, I did not anticipate this happening right now. I did not anticipate it happening in this manner. I was really, really shocked. And the whole day really has felt a bit surreal subsequently, yeah, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it really has, hasn't it? It's just been crazy. My phone, I've never had as many messages and requests to do bits and pieces and to talk about it and everything else. I mean, it is the suddenness of it, I think, that is the shocking thing, isn't it? I'll tell you what I think. I think this happened in the last 24 hours. I think Arsene Wenger made the decision. I think it just was communicated to the club. It doesn't feel to me like this is something they've been sitting on for a while. And Arsenal doesn't feel at this moment in time like a club that sits on things successfully, that if there's, you know, big news, it'll pop out at some point. So my feeling is this happened in the last 24 hours, perhaps after his press conference yesterday. He had conversations with the club and they decided to release a statement.
The only thing that I sort of can't get my head around is the nature of those conversations, I suppose. And unsurprisingly, that's all pretty hush-hush at the moment. But what I mean by that is, you know, was there anything that prompted him to think, well, I'm going to do this of my own accord? You know, essentially, did he jump because he was about to be pushed? And how conscious was he of that? The reason I say that is just that it feels quite out of character in some respects of Arsene Wenger. I don't just mean in terms of the whole I don't break my contracts thing. The fact that we know he loves the job, he wants to stay in the job seemingly, he wanted to see me stay in it seemingly indefinitely at times. But also the fact that I never anticipated really that he's someone who would announce he was going before the end. I thought he would, you know, sort of step away quietly and make an announcement after the season, if that was what he had in mind. To do so with games still on the table feels... Yeah. Unlike him, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, didn't he speak a couple of weeks ago about how he wasn't worried about how he was perceived when he, you know, left the job? Like the idea, someone said to him, wouldn't it be a great idea to go out after you win the Europa League, because then you get to walk away with glory and you get to walk away with goodwill? And he said, I don't really care about that because my focus is just on doing my job. Perhaps there is something to it. Perhaps he did come to understand that regardless of what happens between now and the end of the season, the club were going to go in a different direction. Maybe that's what it was. Either way, though, it still feels like it was something that he decided.
Yes, I guess so. And obviously the statement very much came from him. And also you have to wonder if it was from the club's instigation, you know, if the club somehow communicated it to Arsene things weren't going to continue beyond the end of the season, irrespective of what happened in the Europa League. This would also be a very strange time for them to do that. So perhaps it was just an impression that he, I mean, this is pure speculation, but an impression that he had about the way things were going, and he chose to take control of matters. And there is a benefit to that. You know, his statement talks about the need for the fans to rally around and finish strong. And I do think to a certain extent that is guaranteed. You know, of course you can't guarantee results, but I think you can guarantee the backing of the fans for these half a dozen games or so, whatever's left now.
Yeah, it is going to take the sting out of the criticism, obviously, when we lose games, when we lose like we did at Newcastle on Sunday, and we all look at our record and we look at everything that's gone on, as much as we try and compartmentalize games like that in the wake of, or in the context of the Europa League being the important thing. You know, it does take all the sting out of it, that people can now see, I don't want to say light at the end of the tunnel, you know what I mean? But they can see that change is coming. And I think there has been a real appetite for change for many people. If it consolidates support and if it helps get people behind the team for the final few games of the season, particularly for the Europa League games, then maybe that's part of the thinking too.
It does seem that way. It does seem that way. I mean, certainly the chief executive was keen to present it as such in his press conference. He talked about, you know, we felt collectively that it would be good to pay tribute to Arsene in these remaining games. I mean, I can't quite get my head around Arsene feeling that himself. I just don't think he's got a big ego in some respects, but I don't think he has that kind of vanity. I don't think he enjoys that kind of adulation and attention being poured upon him. So It is a difficult situation, and one we probably, like a lot of things in Arsene's time, won't ever know the exact truth about. This book that he's kept saying he's going to write, I'm not sure he ever will. And I think this might be one of the mysteries that's
I really hope he does. I really, really, really hope he does. If he needs any help writing it, I'd be quite on board with doing the ghost writing on that one, to be honest. What an amazing bunch of stories you get. You were at the press conference this evening. Ivan Gazidis held a press conference to release a statement about Arsene Wenger, in which he spoke I suppose, in glowing terms about it. But the longer it went on, the weirder it felt to me, that press conference. I'm curious as to how you perceived it from in the room.
Well, you know, I got wind that the press conference was going to be called sometime this morning. And I suppose that it's a good thing that somebody from the club came forward and said something. I think that it would have been perhaps problematic if they hadn't. You know, I think often we're accused of not being vocal in terms of our leadership from the boardroom. So I think it probably was good that something was said. However, I do understand what you're saying. It was a slightly curious press conference because he was there, Gazidis, but sort of unwilling to divulge any real detail about anything. Mm. So it became a little redundant in that respect. And actually, I think in not divulging certain things, there was a bit of positioning going on. You know, it'd be very easy for Gazidis to go into that press conference and say, well, I mean, you know, we all hoped Arsene was going to stay on and we were absolutely shocked by what happened. But I think the omission of statements like that, I think, tells you a little bit about the background here. But I think that, you know, we probably will witness or see more of this kind of thing. I think that it's kind of a watershed moment for Gazidis to even hold a press conference of this ilk.
Yeah.
And I think more that Gazidis, I do wonder if... Yeah, well, I do wonder if now that Arsene Wenger is going, we will hear and see more from other figures within the club.
Yeah, I mean, that would be worse. Yeah, that would be normal because Wenger is such a figurehead. But the more the press conference went on, the more unnecessary it felt to me, because if he was going to sit there and talk to the press and provide answers over what is the most seismic event to happen to Arsenal Football Club in maybe 25 years or since George Graham got sacked, you know, Bruce Rioch being sacked came nowhere close to this. So it was the biggest thing to happen to this football club, you know, from an organizational point of view. I'm not talking about the football or the success or anything else. So for him to sit there and to not provide any detail as to how the decision was made, why the decision was made, point to Arsene Wenger to say, well, Arsene will talk on Sunday. I presume he's talking about his post-match press conference after the game against West Ham. You know, it really felt, I don't know, it didn't sit right with me, I have to say, because it felt like, to me, Gazidis was putting himself front and center at a time when, I take your point about somebody from the club saying something, but I don't know, would anybody have had any big problem if, I mean, I would rather, let me put it this way, I would rather they just released a very nice statement on the club website and left it there than reading out a very nice statement and then refusing to answer any questions. And the more and more it went on, the more he spoke about Arsene Wenger as if he was dead or something. It was strange to me. Like, it became almost funereal, like an obituary. And what it is a great manager leaving our football club. And we all understand that's emotional. I don't think anybody today has had any lack of emotion about what's going on. But I it didn't work for me. That's where I am with that. I didn't enjoy that at all.
I'm not sure Arsene would have enjoyed it, to be honest. Maybe particularly given who was delivering it. But I think when it comes to Sunday and it comes to West Ham, I anticipate what he'll want to do is talk about that game. Mm. That is always his focus and always his interest. It's the reason he wasn't there this evening at that particular press conference, because he's preparing for the West Ham match, and that's on the pitch.
That's not why he was. You know, that's not why he wasn't there, though, was it? Really?
He's probably not preparing for it right now. I'd be amazed.
You know, at 5 o'clock on a Friday evening, all the players are gone home. Arsene, if he'd really wanted to, or if it was appropriate for him to be there, could have been there. I think.
But I don't think he wants to, right?
No. Why would you? Why would you? But this was, to me, it was Gazidis putting on a show. I mean, Gazidis has been nowhere to be found for the duration of this season, basically, apart from the odd marketing announcement, nowhere. And last season was the same thing, James. We spoke about it on the Arscast Extra. When the shit was hitting the fan and when Wenger was in front of the press week in, week out, he did his pre-match press conferences, his post-match press conferences, TV interviews, everything else. And the deluge of questions about what's going on, what's your future about, what's happening, are you going to sign a deal, are you staying, are you going? You know, there was nothing from Ivan Gazidis. So, you know, it's just... I feel it's a bit like the Aubameyang thing when mysteriously Gazidis and Mislintat were pictured in Dortmund trying to do the make the signing of Aubameyang happen. You know, ooh, where did that come from? That's what it feels like to me a bit. It was a guy who feels emboldened by a situation, perhaps making people aware that now the balance of power has shifted and he is the guy who's going to hold it.
Yeah, I don't doubt at all. I think that's almost exactly what was going on. And as I say, I think there was a lot of positioning going on. And I think he did say some quite remarkable things in the press conference. At one stage, he said, I don't think there's a board out there with more experience making managerial appointments than ours. And I think that's, you know, extraordinary thing to say. I know, obviously, that Rousseau has overseen some appointments at Barcelona, but nevertheless, I think that's a very, very bold claim. So I think that you're right about Gazidis and the irony of someone being completely silent and then holding their own press conference the minute the manager goes won't be lost on anybody. I just think on the other side of the coin, it's, you know, we criticise the club for not having an executive voice, and then when we do, we criticise them again. So I sort of think a balance has to be struck. You know, I think we have to accept that with Arsene gone, the onus is on someone like Gazidis to be more vocal, yeah. And I imagine he will be. I think that it's... I saw a tweet from you describing what he was saying as mawkish, and I think that that is right. And I think that part of the reason it felt mawkish is that we have a pretty good idea about some of the machinations that have gone on behind the scenes and what he has felt about the manager's position in recent seasons. I think it's been... To be honest, it's been obvious by his absence and by his failure to comment on various circumstances. So that's why it felt a little bit sort of sickly seeing him say, you know, what a great guy Arsene is, because I think he's probably wanted him out for some time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, it's on him now. If he's going to assume this responsibility, then he's got to be front and center for all the bits and pieces and for everything that happens between now and when we appoint a new manager and after we appoint a new manager. I think we're going to see a lot more of Gazidis, for better or for worse, particularly when they make the appointment, because, you know, having been, what's the word, a subject of Arsene Wenger for so long, he will not want to have that same dynamic when the club appoints a new manager. But we'll wait and see.
And I wonder as well if that might play into the kind of manager that he looks to appoint. I mean, he talked about the criteria, but one of the criteria he didn't mention is I suspect that the likes of Gazidis, Sanyei, Mislintat will probably want somebody who they feel works under and for them, you know, rather than someone they work for. And I think that will be a factor in any appointment they make.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, look, James, we're going to leave it there with you. We will chat on Monday on the Arscast Extra after the West Ham game. I suspect we're going to see a much fuller Emirates Stadium than we might have done otherwise. And hopefully the performance will reflect that as well. Have a good weekend. Catch you on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you to James. You can catch us on Monday on the Arscast Extra when we discuss the game against West Ham on Sunday and whatever else Arsene Wenger has to say about this decision and his future in the post-match press conferences and the interviews, etc., etc. But moving on, it's time for a bit of a round table to talk about what has been the most seismic event in Arsenal's history for probably 20, 25 years now since the departure of George Graham. I'm joined by Andrew Allen. Hello.
Good evening.
The Gunnarholic. Hello to you, sir.
Good evening, Blogs. Thanks for inviting me.
And the man from East Lower. Hello.
Bonsoir.
Let me start with you, Jim. Next season, we're going to have press conferences and we're going to do podcasts and we're going to read news stories. And Arsene Wenger is not going to be any part of them. That is going to be weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is weird. That's just one small thing of one small parcel of weirdness. But yeah, the whole thing is weird. We're going to have to recalibrate everything, really, that we've got used to, that we either loved or maybe didn't love quite so much in the last few years. But we have to start afresh. And so much of what we loved to listen to, certainly if you're talking about press conferences, it was great fun to listen to a lot of the time, and that's gonna change. But I think that's probably the least of the changes that will be pressing.
Yeah. I mean, surreal is a word that springs to mind, Andrew. I think one of the other words that has been used throughout the course of this day is emotional. I don't think there's been an Arsenal fan, one way or the other, who hasn't been a bit emotional today. And I would say for most of us, it's been remembering all the things that we like and admire about Arsene Wenger, that somehow this announcement has, I won't say glossed over everything, but it's sort of brought into focus all the good things that he's done for the club. And this relationship that we had with him, that perhaps in recent years has been a little bit strained, but it's hard not just to be affectionate. I felt very affectionate towards him today.
Oh, absolutely. I found it a really difficult day, actually. Like, I mean, we seemed to get wind of there being something about to come out of the club about 5-10 minutes before it did. And when it did, I literally, sitting at my desk at work, went, holy shit. And yeah, like the hairs on the back of my arms just went on end. And I was speechless for a few moments. And then I realized this was real. And yeah, I mean, it was just, he's been such a big part of, I guess, my life for 22 years now. I mean, you know, the last 7 or 8 in particular, when I've written down his words on a day by day basis, it feels like, you know, I've listened to this man speak more than I've probably listened to any man speak. I've analyzed his words more than I've listened to any man. You know, I've seen him talk in the flesh, and he's mesmeric, actually, you know, especially when you kind of take him out of a press conference environment. It's very strange. I'm very sad, very emotional. I mean, I always thought that this probably was how I was going to feel, but when it happens, you're still not really ready for it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, Dave, you've seen some managers come and go in your time, and it hasn't always been perhaps as friendly as it might have been in some of the circumstances, but big characters have come and gone. But it really feels the length of his tenure, obviously, and the success that he brought to the club, and the transformative effect that Arsene Wenger has had on the club, more than any other manager. I mean, you could make the case for George Graham, of course, coming into a club that had been in the doldrums from a league title point of view, and winning two titles had that kind of effect. But this, because of how long he's been in charge, really does feel like something a bit different.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think it harks back as well to the era of Herbert Chapman, because George was a great manager for getting players to play and to discipline style. But Herbert Chapman and Arsene Wenger have both taken the club further off the pitch, and they've been great innovators of their time. And everything that Arsene brought to the table when he first arrived, and people talk about the diet and the training methods that were so different to what we were used to. And I remember listening to Paul Merson earlier today talking about the Arsenal lads in the England squad going and doing these different exercises before warming up, and the England players were asking him what's going on. So the impact he's had on the club and the way that it still to this day operates has been huge. It's been a shame what's happened over the last few years, maybe, when money has been freed up for him, and the timing is probably right. But I'm awfully glad you asked Andrew the question about the emotional part of the day, because it has been very emotional for some of us.
All right. Well, I'm not letting you off the hook. What was your first thought when you heard the news?
I was very, very surprised. And the reason I was surprised, I thought for a while, or had been led to believe for a while, he was going in the summer. Mm. But I didn't think there was going to be any announcement before the end of the season, because that seems to be the modus operandi of the club. But I think the timing of it is actually fantastic, because you now have a fan base that will be absolutely rejuvenated and together for next Thursday's Europa League semi-final. There's now an extra impetus on the players to deliver in that semi-final, and it will give the supporters the opportunity to show him their true appreciation of what he's achieved, and he'll go in the right manner.
Jim, do you think that was part of his thinking? Because some of the stories we saw today, I think The Guardian were reporting that there was a very, very real danger that he would be sacked in the summer, and perhaps Arsene Wenger, understanding that, has taken matters into his own hands and made the decision. I mean, it feels to me like he made the decision. It feels to me he made the decision very, very recently. It's not like this is something that the club have been aware of for any length of time, hence the shock and hence the reaction and everything else. But do you think that was probably part of why he made that decision? Because he knows that things are so febrile at this moment in time, that there is this atmosphere that envelops the club. You know, we just lost to Newcastle. We haven't won an away game. That's all hanging over the Europa League, whether we try and say the Premier League is unimportant or not. He's aware of that, and he's aware of the atmosphere. And, you know, I was sort of looking at my blog this morning, where I was going, I was disappointed in him for the reaction that he had to the question about attendances. And now feels very churlish now in the wake of his announcement, but perhaps it's part of his plan to ensure that he gets the most, as Dave is saying, from the players and also from the fans.
Yeah, it may be. I think it's possibly an element of both things happening here, where he was led to believe that maybe the decision would have been taken out of his hands, because we know how much he loved the job. He loves the job. Loved the job. It's been well reported that he can't really envisage a life outside football. So I think if he'd made the decision ages ago, I don't think they'd have waited till the end of the season anyway, because I think the very least, in terms of a courtesy, the very least that the club would have done would be to let him have the final home game in front of the fans. And so I think actually, were it to happen, it probably would always have happened around now. That being said, I did not see it coming. And, that's what makes it quite, I suppose, a shock. And you could say, well, it shouldn't be a shock. He's been there so long and things have got so bad. But, you know, the way he's clung on, and the way that the people at the top of the club have always said they've got his faith in him, that you kind of, and also the form's been a bit better recently too. You kind of always have in the back of your mind that he's going to try and plow on for another season, but it's not to be.
Yeah, I mean, people were saying if he wins the Europa League, he'll stay on because he's got Champions League football. And, you know, you could make a very good case for a manager to stay on in a job if they win you a European trophy, as much as you could make the case for it to be a good time for him to go. You know, if the manager wants to stay after he wins a European trophy, Arsenal are not the kind of club that have been that ruthless in the past to dispense with the services of a manager who has brought them success. Andrew, what's your reading on on how this went down. And Ivan Gazidis had a press conference. I spoke a bit earlier in the podcast about this to James, where as the press conference went on, it felt more and more like an obituary, and there wasn't a great deal of information about why it happened, how it happened, the process, when the conversations happened. What's your reading on it? Or, you know, obviously it's just speculation, as all of us, that's all we can do at this moment in time, but I'm curious as to what you think happened and how it went down.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think, like everybody, I'm not quite sure. I think it's really interesting. In the back of my mind, what I want to have happened is that he's made the decision. I'd be even more sad if I found out that actually the decision had been made by the club. But the more I read about it, I mean, I see that the Times have gone with the headline, "Distraught Wenger Forced Out of Arsenal." The suggestion, as seems to have been the same case with the Guardian, that the guillotine was going to come down in the summer, and this was the best way for him to get some form of goodbye on his own terms. And the club was obviously going to do everything they could, given the circumstances, to kind of focus the attention on his legacy and all the rest of it. I said to you privately at the time, I didn't really understand the need for the Gazidis press conference.
Yeah.
If Gazidis was going to stand up in front of everybody and not really answer the questions. I mean, he knew the types of questions that were going to be coming his way. He effectively read out a statement, a pre-prepared statement, and then actively turned down questions that were posed to him, and kind of did the Gazidis filibustering that he usually does and left. And, you know, that was strange. I mean, it felt very much about Gazidis's, you know, what he's been doing in the background to not necessarily facilitate this, but to at least mitigate for what happens next, you know, or to put the foundations down for what happens next. It was an odd one. Particularly strange, I guess, to hear from Gazidis without maybe even Wenger there. But I suppose, as you said, like, Wenger's naturally just going to be focused on trying to beat West Ham on Sunday.
Dave, what was your reading on the press conference and the way it happened? I mean, some will say it's good to hear from the chief executive, from the board. It's good to hear after a big decision like this, after a big announcement. It's important to hear from that level of the club. But if we're not going to get anything beyond a perfunctory statement, which could easily have been released on the website, and if Gazidis was going to talk a lot and say very little, which is, you know, often the way that it goes, it feels a bit more cynical to me anyway.
Yeah, I think you might have a point, and there may be an ulterior motive behind it. But as you say, speculation by us at this point really isn't going to help the situation. It was interesting, I thought, the way that Arsene phrased his resignation statement, in that he had it was a result of talks with the club. I think that tells you a great deal if you look behind that statement. When those last talks were held would be interesting to know. Was it 9 o'clock this morning? Did Ivan say, okay, this is something we need to talk about and for you to consider very carefully? I suspect not. I suspect it was before yesterday, which was why Arsene looked a little bit not at ease at the press conference, which he usually deals with rather well, no matter what's hanging over his head. But I thought there was a little nervousness and a bit of tetchiness about him yesterday. So I suspect it's something that's been done for days now rather than just this morning.
Let me ask you, let me stick with you. Do you have any concerns that this is not the right decision?
No.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. I think it was the right decision. I think the timing of it is actually the right timing, because let's face it, we've not had the best of seasons in terms of our principal target of the Premier League. We haven't made the Champions League unless we win the Europa League for the second season running. I don't think we've been playing consistently the style of football that Arsene is trying to achieve, which means he's lost something in terms of his relationship with the team. So everything said, yes, this is the right thing to happen, but it's still, sorry to see it end this way, and I hope it doesn't end this way. I hope we go out and win that Europa League, and he goes with cheers ringing in his ears.
Yeah, Jim, do you feel like even if, let's say we don't win the Europa League, and it is a tall task, I mean, we've got a very difficult semi-final against Atletico Madrid, how will you view the final years of Arsene Wenger's tenure? Because it is this curious mix, isn't it, where we had a trophy drought at a time when we were perhaps playing some really nice football. We had a team that could play some beautiful stuff at times. We had some really great players, but they never achieved anything. We became perhaps a bit more functional, even though we added players like Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil to the side, and we had success. We had three FA Cups, and you know, anyone out there who wants to roll their eyes at three FA Cups, be my guest, but I enjoyed them. I thought they were wonderful times. And, you know, when you see other clubs decide that, you know, the FA Cup is not important despite the fact they haven't won anything in years and years and years, you know, that's your remit. I think as fans, we've all enjoyed those days at Wembley or wherever it was that you watched those FA Cup final wins. At the same time, we've had this, I guess, inexorable decline in our league form. So how do you view the last number of years?
I see. I think there's, you know, as you've pretty much done, you split it into two things. And from a league and Champions League perspective, it's been a decline, and it really has. So we sort of went, like you said, from being competitive in the league to not so competitive, but playing good football, to actually being neither. And the Champions League has been a debacle. It really is no other word for it, culminating in a 10-2 aggregate loss. That really... If that didn't set alarm bells off, then nothing else would. But the FA Cups have been brilliant. And, you know, like you say, a lot of clubs would kill for that, to win three FA Cups. But you know, Arsene essentially has made a rod for his own back by how successful he was at the beginning of his career. Mm. And so we've come to expect to challenge for the league every season. Now, look, if you look at Arsenal's history, we're not that kind of club. We kind of come in fits and starts and His success made us more ambitious as fans and expect more. And so ultimately, the decline was there for all to see, and it was quite clear for some years that he couldn't turn that round. So I think you see it like you see his reign overall through different lenses.
Yeah. Was there a breaking point for you? When I say a breaking point, was there a point where you think, okay, that's it? We really need to go in a different direction. Was it something? Was it a game? Was it a season? Or was it just slower and steadier?
I think it's one of those things that makes this makes the topic quite hard. And other fans will say, "Oh, you're so spoiled," because it really was one of those things that's just chipped away over such a long period of time. Mm. that unless you can see the context of it, you think, "Well, they're just being spoiled." But it's not like that at all. So, is there a single point? Probably not. But if I look back now, I think, you know, losing 8-2 at Old Trafford was, you know, unacceptable. And that's quite a long time ago now. But I think the one for me which really, really hit home for me was on his 1,000th game, where you'd expected his team to put in a hell of a performance. We got thrashed 6-0 at Stamford Bridge. Mm. And I really did think at that point, there's no way back now. And I suppose you could pinpoint many others, but I just think it was a very slow, very gradual thing that built up ultimately.
I have to say, for me, it was the Manchester United game in the season that Leicester won the title. You know, when City were not in it, when Liverpool were not in it, United weren't in it, Chelsea weren't in it, the opportunity was there for us to go and win the title, and we couldn't do it. And that, for me, was the point where I said, okay, we really, really have to go in a different direction. I know that everybody comes to this realization, this particular opinion at a certain point. Andrew, was there anything for you, or is it, like Jim, been slower and steadier?
Slow and steady. I think there were sort of games and results and home performances that chipped away, and you kind of started to feel like, you know, this isn't going to turn around. This isn't going to get better. There isn't necessarily going to be a kind of great revival and a huge period of success under Arsene. You always hoped. I mean, at least I did. There were matches like, you know, losing 2-0 at home to Swansea in 2012 when Michu scored a brace or something. And it was just little things like that and it just chipped away at you bit by bit by bit. And initially those results were kind of outliers. And then they kind of became a bit more common. and the performances behind them became a bit more regular because teams started to play the same way as those teams that had achieved those results. And yeah, I mean, this season really, I've missed one game this season, and you sit there on those cold nights of some of the crappy early rounds of the Europa League and the stadium's empty and you're looking about and you're just like, what's happened here? This is it really now. It's the end of day stuff. But it was a really slow, gradual process because I love the man. You know, I love what he stands for. And, you know, when you're an idealist like Arsene, you kind of, you know, he's a positive person. He's an influencer. He's an optimist.
He's an optimist. I was going to say exactly that.
He's an optimist. And I'm not an optimist. I'm a pessimist. But I look at Arsene's optimism and it makes me feel sometimes that I too could maybe be an optimist. And to see an optimist kind of get beaten down as he has been over the last few years, and ultimately he hasn't won the day, unless of course we may go out with a Europa League win, to see him sort of slowly crushed by it all is really quite heartbreaking.
I read somewhere, Dave, somebody saying that they felt, it could have been Tim on 7 a.m. kickoff, actually wrote a piece about Arsene Wenger, and he said he was relieved. He said he didn't know if he was relieved for himself or if he was relieved for Arsene Wenger. And, you know, I think one of the frustrating things for me, certainly writing the blog and doing the podcast, is the separation between what you think about Arsene Wenger as a man and a person and Arsene Wenger as a football manager. And I've always tried to stress the point that while I feel Arsenal have needed to go in a different direction for a while, while I feel that Arsene's performances haven't been up to the standards that he set, you can be critical of his performance but still like the man and still be emotionally attached to him. And there is this sense that if you're in any way critical of Arsene Wenger, you're accused of being some kind of, you know, Wenger-hating extremist. It's not the case. It's really not the case. You can be critical of him and what he does, but still like him very much. And it's always been the case for me that I've admired him, I've liked him, I've enjoyed him, I like listening to him for the most part. You know, there are times, of course, when he drives you absolutely up the wall with some of the stuff that he says, and you go, oh my God, this again. But like, there are other times where he's in a room and he's in a press conference and they're asking him about something that's got nothing to do with Arsenal or nothing to do with football. And he talks so brilliantly and fluently and cogently and intelligently about so many things. And I've always found it, I've always found, to me anyway, that he's represented Arsenal Football Club in a really great way for me. He sort of has values and integrity that I like and we all like to think is part of Arsenal. That's going to be a difficult thing to replace, as much as the football management side of things as well.
Absolutely, and thank you. I think you've just written my blog that I'm going to get out tonight before yours comes out in the morning.
Be my guest.
Superb. Yeah, the original point being that you can like him as a man despite having very real misgivings about the direction he's gone in as a football coach, not necessarily as a manager of the football club. I think he's tried to put the right things in place, but they haven't quite fitted, and his methods maybe have fallen a little bit behind what other coaches are achieving. But yeah, utterly got respect for the guy, and I know where we all stood on him when, you know, 10 years ago even, when the drought years started. I think we all were of a view that he would be the man, if anybody could do it at a new stadium with no money, he would be the guy who could do it. And we were fiercely defending him at that time, and I think quite rightly. But what I think has happened over the last few years is gradually they've chipped away at Arsene, the coach. And although the man always wants to improve himself, he always wants to learn new things, he hasn't learned enough what is your favourite word, footballistically, is kind of lost out in that area. And it is so sad to see, because I really would have liked to see him succeed. I think we probably, most of us would.
Yeah. Jim, there was never any sense that he wasn't working hard. I mean, we would go through summers and we go through transfer windows and we wonder about the inertia and we wonder about perhaps the lack of decisiveness when it comes to signing players or targeting players or bringing players in. And those were frustrations, I think, for a lot of people. But I never got the sense that he was going through the motions. It was the worse it got, the harder he tried. And that, for me, was a difficult thing to see at times. You knew he was working harder and harder and harder, and he was, in many ways, just running to stand still.
Yeah, apart from the summer when he forgot to sign any outfield players.
Well, really. Yeah.
No, I think no one can ever doubt that. You know, he would have been gone long, long, long ago if he was the kind of man that would have taken his foot off the pedal. You know, to have lasted 22 years is testament to his hard work and his discipline and his dedication. So that was never in question. I think it was pure and simple that, you know, you anyone in any job, 22 years, you lose a bit of the edge. And to have lasted that long, you could say on the one hand was phenomenal, and it is, but it just stopped being enough. And, you know, there are millions of reasons why that might be. Not all of them attributed to him, perhaps. But at the same time, it was quite clear it was happening. And I think in many respects, I think the decision should really have been taken out of his hand a little bit sooner. But he was never going to make it. So, yeah, I think he couldn't have done much more. Some of the twists he tried last season to make things better worked for a bit, but then not again. And ultimately, you kind of run out of steam at the end. So I think the club have realised that he ran out of steam, and maybe now himself too, which is, you know, which is great, because it is time, and it has been time. And so I think this gives him the time to go with the absolute respect that he deserves.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point to make. Regardless of what you think about the way the last few years have been, I think he deserves respect. He deserves credit for the achievements that he's had at this football club. He's done things at Arsenal that no other manager has done at us or any other club for that matter. You know, when we talk about going through a season unbeaten, and, you know, it's impossible not to think about the great times, and really some of them were just absolutely amazing times that he's given us as a manager and as supporters of this club. Jim, let me just stick with you. What was your reaction when in 1996 you discovered that Arsenal had appointed Arsene Wenger? I'll tell you how I found out about this, because this was really I don't think I had the internet at the time. I had the poor man's internet, which was CFAX. And I remember at the time the names mentioned were Arsene Wenger. I think Terry Venables was being mentioned at the time, but also Johan Cruyff. And I was very wedded to the idea of Johan Cruyff coming to Arsenal simply because of his track record as a player and as a manager at Barcelona. You thought, wow, that would be pretty amazing. And I was looking at CFAX and discovered that Arsene Wenger had been appointed the new manager of Arsenal, and was like, well, I don't know what the fuck is going to happen here. Do you remember what you thought?
Do you know, it's funny because I genuinely don't. I think the trouble is there's that apocryphal story of the Evening Standard saying Arsene who, which has now done the rounds so much that I part of me thinks I must have seen it in the Standard, but I don't remember having done so. My first real memory of it, apart from seeing his press conference on the big screen at Highbury, was, you know, either shortly before he officially joined or shortly after, when Patrick Vieira came on off the subs bench and made this most incredible immediate difference. And I suddenly thought, this is Wenger signing. This is something completely different, you know. And I think at that point I thought something was going on. So the honest answer, I would love to lie to you and say I remember doing this, that, and the other. I can't remember. But I do remember the whole Cruyff thing and thinking, yeah, that would be a much better appointment. But I wouldn't have thought I was the only person thinking that.
No, I don't think so. Dave, can you search that far back in your memory banks? Do you remember what was in your mind when we brought him in?
Yeah, absolutely. This will be to my eternal shame. I felt very, very, very sorry for Pat Rice, because if you remember, he had started the season as number two to Stuart Houston as a caretaker. Stuart Houston applied for the manager's job and was told he wouldn't get it and resigned. Pat Rice carried on with the team, and by the time we got up to the dreaded UEFA Cup tie with Mönchengladbach, we were actually level on points with Liverpool at the top of the league and looking a half-decent side, and he was doing what I thought, and many people thought, was a great job. And then all of a sudden this guy walks in who I'd remembered the summer of speculation, which looking back now was probably David Dean leaking the information about this guy in Japan, because he'd already tried to bring him into the club once and been outvoted on the board. And so I thought this was his way of letting the public have a view on what was happening and to get the board on the side. And you had all these articles from Glenn Hoddle and Mark Hatley and the like saying what a magnificent coach he was and how he had transformed their latter days. And so it proved to be, when he turned out, what the hell did I know? Because those first 10 years were just an absolute roller coaster and more ups than downs for sure.
Yeah. Andrew, how old were you when Arsene Wenger took over?
13.
Right. So you would have been that kind of obsessive teenage phase of supporting your football club. So what do you remember what you were thinking?
I mean, I remember the George Graham exit being quite clinical, and that, you know, I was going to the odd game at the time. Kind of, I didn't have a season ticket. My dad had a season ticket and he sat next to a friend, and if his friend couldn't go, then I would go along. But I think as Jim mentioned, it was that Sheffield Wednesday game when Arsenal won, was it 4-1? And I think they brought Vieira off on at half time. But before the game, and I was watching on Sky Sports, before the game they did a video clip from Arsene Wenger, I think, introducing himself to the crowd. And they played that on Sky. And you're kind of, you know, it was just different, wasn't it? I mean, it was a bit weird. I don't fully remember what I felt, but I do remember watching that game and when Vieira came on, thinking, Jesus, like, this guy's good. And right, he scored a hat trick. And, you know, we had a nice, you know, relatively strong finish to the season. And it was really that following season, though, right? 97-98, when, you know, Arsenal had his pre-season with the players, and suddenly the way they were playing football was different. It wasn't initially great, because I was there the day, I think the 13th of December 1997, we lost 3-1 to Blackburn.
Yeah.
Sixth league defeat of the season. And, you know, we looked as far away from winning the title under Wenger then as we did under Graham a couple of seasons before. And then something just clicked, you know, Petit, Vieira, Bergkamp, Anelka, I guess, with Wright injured. Adams and Dixon and Winterburn were coming together again. And Steve, I mean, it was just, yeah, I mean, something just happened. But I, you know, I can't say I knew, nobody knew anything about him really, apart from David Dean.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, the story even behind him joining is just fantastic. I mean, all of it is just chance, serendipity, really.
It became clear quite not quickly. I mean, there was a team meeting, wasn't there, after that Blackburn game where Vieira and Petit were told, you've got to give this defense a little more protection. But I suppose the game that really made us think something was happening was that game at Old Trafford, Dave. The 1-0 when Overmars scored that goal. It was, I think, the second game in that run that took us to the title. The second win of 9 or 10 wins in a row, I think, culminating with that game against Everton, the Tony Adams game. But that game, United were a brilliant team. But going there, it lives in the memory because of the Arsenal fan in the crowd who reacted to that Overmars goal. And I think the reason that resonated, it wasn't just a dude celebrating a goal, an important goal in an important game. It was because I think we all felt there was something happening with the team, or that something could happen if we were able to go to Old Trafford and beat United on their own home patch. And so it proved that run to the first Premier League title for Arsene Wenger was incredible.
You're absolutely right. And the importance of that Manchester United game can't be overlooked with the benefit of hindsight, because it was probably the first of the matches that we played them at such a level of intensity that I couldn't remember in an Arsenal-Manchester United game before. And United did come out, as they were wont to do in those days, to kick us off the park. And that Arsenal side showed immense courage that night. And you talk about the guy with the afro celebrating that goal of Overmars. The other thing I absolutely loved about that night was the guy who had the banner saying Old Trafford champion section. That was superb. But yeah, and the end of that season, you say, that Everton game, it's the exact opposite emotion of today. It's just pure joy you felt, and particularly in the way that we clinched it with that Tony Adams goal. But you know, the guy proved to us that day and that season that we were going to be a very special force for a while to come.
Yeah, I mean, that was a double, Jim. The FA Cup final against Newcastle, Overmars and Anelka scoring that day, but that was a double. But then we went a little while without winning the league again. But I suppose what made it interesting in many ways was this rivalry with Manchester United. And I'm pretty sure most of the people listening to this podcast will remember it. If you were too young to remember it, I'm very sorry to tell you, but this was something just amazing. This tension, this hatred, this rivalry, this competitiveness between the two teams, the two managers. You know, what does Arsene Wenger know about English football? He comes over here from Japan. He doesn't know anything. Wenger is, you know, everyone thinks they got the prettiest wife at home. Ferguson goes mental. You know, it was an amazing rivalry between two fantastically competitive football teams who gave no quarter in any game. And for a while, obviously, Manchester United had the better of that because they won the title. Did they win it for 3 years in a row? 99, 2000, 2001, you know.
Yes.
99, I don't really want to talk about. It's too soon and everything else. But Jim, I mean, that was really, really something special, wasn't it? Like, in an era now where people talk about how competitive the Premier League is and it's great because you've got a top six rather than a top two. But this was absolute box office. This was Ali versus Foreman. It was like just up there with the best sporting rivalries of all time, I think.
I think so. It was the match of the season, and it was massively exciting. And it could have swung both ways, which it often did. And that's what made it so exciting. And I think, you know, you said at the beginning of this question, oh, you know, we'd gone some time before winning the title. It was 4 years. So, you know, that sort of puts it into some perspective compared to where we're at now. So it wasn't that long. And, but it was watching those games, and, you know, even now you look back at them, and they're phenomenal. And you look at the crowd when Arsenal score in one of those big games, and there's something else, there's something extra, which I think we've lost. You know, for one reason or another. And so they were great times, and those kind of iconic moments of Will Tord scoring and Kanu and that gold shirt with Sager on it. I love that shirt. And it all to me kind of points back to that time, which was a great time. And we did have the ability in us at that point to go on these massive runs. So in 1998, we did go on that huge run that won us the title. 2002 was something similar. And I think that's yet another thing we've lost, is the ability for that consistency and that sort of get the bit between our teeth and go. We don't have it anymore. So, yeah, it was really exciting. You kind of knew at the time that once Arsenal had a head of steam up, they were pretty hard to stop. It was really exciting.
Andrew, I know we're a bit biased about this because we wrote a book about it, but the unbeaten season really is going to be the crowning glory of Arsene Wenger's time at Arsenal. And I think rightly so. We spoke for the podcast we did for the Patreon members about how maybe you could talk about that team underachieving, particularly when it came to the Champions League. You know, this was a season where everything seemed to be set up for Arsenal to go all the way in Europe, and we all know what happened with that Wayne Bridge goal. But going through an entire league season unbeaten is, as even Manchester City this season have discovered, by far and away the best team in the league. And I think the league we went unbeaten in was a bit more competitive. There was a bit more closeness between us and the rest of the teams compared to Manchester City and some of the rest of the teams. Is an amazing thing to do.
Yeah, and I think if Arsene ever does write that book that he keeps teasing us about, he'll probably put a lot of the focus both on the highs and the lows of that season, because I think he also knows that that team should have won the Champions League. But it was, there was something beautiful. It was, you know what, I think actually the peak of that team was just before it lost to Manchester United. It was the start of the 04-05 season when actually we rocked up to teams and matches and you just genuinely thought, how many goals are we going to score today? And I used to love, I used to love tuning into the away games on TV and sitting there and basically kind of popcorn at the ready, kind of like, feed me goals, guys. And they did, they just did. And, you know, that Middlesbrough game when I think we were 3-1 down and we just stormed back, won 5-3 in the end. Amazing, amazing day at Highbury that. I mean, it was just, it was one of those, you know, there's nothing better in football, I don't think, than your team scoring like twice in a minute. And twice in a minute when you've just been like down. It was just, there were so many amazing moments in that. And I was with my brother that day and we just went absolutely spare. But they were, that the Invincibles were, I mean, I think it's everything that if you were a football manager, you would want to combine in a team. And he had that sort of, I guess, British core with old Sol Campbell in there at the back and stuff and Parler and, you know, that kind of grit. But then the physicality of Vieira and the guile of Pires and Henri, it was the perfect concoction, really. And every time the team who was, you know, not lost for the longest in the season since then, every time I celebrate the day that they lose their first game, knowing that it's kind of like a small victory for my own personal memories, because it's just, you know, I hope one day that I get to tell my grandkids that I saw that team that didn't ever lose, you know?
Yeah. I think the Middlesbrough game, that game is one of my favorite games in the Arsene Wenger era. Dave, do you feel sometimes like, there's a famous Wenger quote, isn't there, that once you've had caviar, it's very difficult to go back to sausage. Not that there's anything wrong with sausage, and I personally would prefer caviar or a sausage with my fry up than a load of caviar. But when you think back to that team, to the Invincible side, and the side maybe from 2002 to 2004, Arsenal Football Club, who we all love and respect and think the best of as much as possible, but we're aware of the fact that we're not a Real Madrid, we're not a Barcelona, we're not even a Manchester United, we're not, you know, an AC Milan, a team with this, or Bayern Munich, etc. We're not one of the big, big, big teams in Europe. But at that time, we had four players who any one of those teams would have taken from us. In Henri, Vieira, Pires, and Bergkamp.
Yeah.
And while you've got to give some credit to Arsene Wenger for bringing those players in, for developing them, you know, Henri and Vieira from quite young. Pires, I think, was 25 or 26 when he joined, but he took his game to a new level. Dennis Bergkamp was going to be a genius regardless of who was manager, but, you know, the way that Wenger utilized him helped get the best out of all of those players. It was an amazing time, and probably one which is kind of impossible to repeat simply because of the way football has gone with money. The best players in the world are going to be at the biggest clubs in the world because they get snapped up and they get paid the biggest wages. Even if you are to develop them organically in a way that we kind of did with two, maybe three of those players, it's still an amazing thing for Arsenal to have four of the best players in the world in their team at any one time.
Absolutely. Something I've always been very proud about and thought perhaps we didn't recognise it as such at the time. But Arsene's tenure has really boiled down to three phases where he has tried to follow the most successful sides of the day. And of course, for that first decade, it was very much the France of 98 World Cup winners that he styled himself around. He had a good chunk of that team anyway. And when they suddenly started losing, but Barcelona became a force with Messi and the likes, that we tried to copy the Barcelona style after the move to the Grove, and players like Fabregas and Nasri and Hleb were brought in to try and play that quick ticky-tacky that turned into tippy-tappy at times with Arsenal. He'd never quite mastered it. And of course, this third phase where he's tried to repeat the success of the German sides, but he hasn't got quite close to the unity that they have, that the effort that they put in when they pull the German shirt over their heads. And I think that you were saying we'll probably never see that again, and you're probably right, but you just don't know. If a new man who knows of a market, an untapped market, if there are any left, comes in, brings in those unpolished diamonds and polishes them, then that could be what's next, or next to but one for us. I got a feeling the next guy might be a temporary hand on the tiller.
Well, I mean, that brings me to my next question, Jim. Do you have any preference? Is it just too difficult to know who we're going to bring in? I mean, I guess it's an impossible question to ask you who we're going to bring in, so I'm not going to ask you that. Do you have perhaps a profile of manager that you think we might go for? My feeling is that they are going to go for somebody up and coming, somebody who will not wield the same kind of power as Arsene Wenger. I don't think that in itself is possible because of, you know, the circumstances of Wenger and the length of time he's been at the club. But if you bring in a big name manager wants power, whereas maybe if you bring in somebody who's not necessarily still learning their trade but early in their career, it means that they've got to work with the board that's there and with the football executive structure that's there. So is that the way you think we're going to go, or do you think we might bring in somebody experienced just to kind of steady the ship for a year or two because we don't want to do what Manchester United did, for example?
I don't think we'll bring someone in explicitly for a season. And I also don't... I think if it was me, I think you could rule out the people that haven't got the right experience. So I'm thinking of the Vieiras and Artetas and those kind of names that crop up from time to time. I just think, no, it's completely the wrong time for that kind of appointment. I don't think it matters how experienced they are, because I think any manager would know they're not going to get the power that Wenger got. No modern manager does.
Yeah.
So I don't think it matters if you got in an Ancelotti figure who's a very, very experienced manager. He wouldn't expect to have to wield the same kind of power that Wenger has. He wouldn't want it. And so I don't think that side of it matters really. I think you've got to pick someone who, yes, is up and coming, but has the requisite experience in Europe and also managing big name players, because we've got quite a lot of big name players and people that probably are going to be a little bit resistant to change. And I think to bring in a real up and coming person with little experience, I'm not sure that would work with the best will in the world. So I would expect someone with a bit of middle ground. So, you know, someone who's got some experience at the very highest level, but not necessarily a sort of grizzled old veteran, and definitely rule out those who haven't had the right kind of experience.
Andrew, have you any preference beyond being an ABB, which I'm going to inform is anyone but Brendan?
I guess this time last year, I was, you know, when you looked at the options, I was very much about Ancelotti, just because I couldn't see us with any form of succession plan in place. And, you know, I thought it was going to take someone who would at least have the experience and the know-how and, you know, someone who's obviously been in the Premier League before to be able to kind of potentially guide us through what could be a very dark phase, you know. But, you know, the club have put some positions in place with Sanley and Mislintat, and they seem to have sort of started doing that work a while ago. And I feel a little bit more open to the idea of having someone with, let's say, less experience, but a bit of European pedigree. At this point, I'm just quite open. I mean, for all of my sadness, you know, about saying goodbye to Arsene, there is a sense of excitement about a different type of football. I mean, it's not like we're surrendering a manager who has been, you know, leading us to regular success recently. We're sixth, fighting for sixth place in the league at the moment. So, you know, you're kind of a bit more open to the idea that something different doesn't necessarily have to be something worse. I hope that the person comes in and does stick to some of Arsene's traditions, like trying to produce talent who, you know, have come through the academy. It looks as though they're about to win the under-23 league. They're 2-0 up at half-time as I speak. And if they win that game against West Ham tonight, they'll be champions for the first time since 1990, says George Bird. So, you know, I'd love to see us continue to play young talent. And if there's someone out there who can come in and do that, then I'm all for it.
Dave, are you, I think we all are emotional, but I agree with Andrew. I'm kind of excited because we're going to see something new. We're going to see something different. We're going to see, hopefully, a realization that maybe we need to play a different kind of football. The two men that we do have in the back room now who are going to be key men. I think it's very important that these guys perform and deliver for the football club, Sven Mislintat and Raul Sanlehi. They've got a big responsibility, as well as Ivan Gazidis, who's put himself front and center with his press conference. You know, the onus now is on them to pick the right man. And if they do that, things could be quite exciting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm still of the opinion that I think it's going to be a senior hand for 2-3 years, steady the ship, before someone like perhaps Patrick Vieira might be ready in 3 years' time. Mm. And I'm not so sure that he is today. Or even Mikel Arteta. I think there's a lot of good feeling towards him in the boardroom. Oh, by the way, Andrew, we've just gone 3-0 up with 20 minutes to go at West Ham.
Get in there.
So that's good news.
Go on.
You're right, it's an exciting and nervous time as well at the same time, because you don't know what it's going to be. And that's kind of, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what we're going to play like under a new manager. I'm looking forward to starting next season and a new manager coming out and say we'll do our best to win the league or whatever. But, you know, it's such a possibility for us next season that we haven't kind of felt that we've had for 2 or 3 seasons.
I'm looking forward to a manager who can give us some new buzzwords and catchphrases. Enough about handbrakes and mental strength. Let's see what the new guy can come up with. Jim, just very finally, there is this perception or this idea, isn't there, that getting rid of Arsene Wenger is going to be some kind of panacea to all of our problems. It's not the case. It could go down as well as up, right? But that's the way we've got to go with it.
Yeah, I absolutely. I think it needs to happen. Whatever is going to happen needs to happen. And it has needed to happen for a long time. So I don't think that holds any fear for most people. I think people want to see something different happening, and they want to, you know, feel a bit of hope that perhaps we could get back to that level. But yeah, it could go the other way. It's very, you know, the Ferguson example is a very strong example. The difference, I suppose, is that Ferguson won the title in his last year. We're sixth. And you know, a good manager should be able to get. I think this squad, whilst not perfect and has holes in it, should be doing better than sixth. And so on that basis alone, you know, there's something to be excited about. And if it gets a bit worse, it gets a bit worse. That's football. But I just think it needed to be different.
All right. Well, look, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this evening. It has been like an amazingly surreal, emotional, weird, exciting, saddening kind of day. Hopefully we've made some sense of it for people. There's a lot to process, and still, I think we should point out, a lot to do this season. There's a lot to play for. There's a big prize in terms of a European trophy. There's a big prize in terms of entry to the Champions League, which I'm sure any new manager would love to have. So we'll keep fingers crossed that, you know, the ideal scenario is that these players can respond and can really consolidate and put in the performances that will allow Arsene Wenger to go out with a trophy. And I think it would be an amazing thing. The goodwill he would get for doing that would be fantastic. So, Andrew, thank you. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you very much.
Dave Gunnarholic, thanks a million.
Oh, thanks, folks, for the invite again.
And you can have that blog, by the way. I'll proofread it for you if you want. Jim, the man from East Lower, thank you.
Oh, thanks. Nice to talk to you guys, and exciting times ahead, hopefully.
Yeah.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Here comes Overmars. Now Arsenal have Premiership and Old Trafford.
All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears in rain.
He's up to Bergkamp, who looks at Vieira!
And why did I stay at Arsenal? When you found what is important for you, that means the you share the values that are important for you with your club. Don't be stupid enough just for an ego or a glory problem to go somewhere else. And I'm very proud of that, you know, because this club cherishes the values I love. Let's be together to support our players and to support the club and give absolutely all together our best.
I don't think there's any doubt for every Arsenal fan out there, for everyone who's listening to this anyway, it has been a really emotional day. And we've had some down the years, and we've had some with Arsene Wenger, good and bad. But when I saw that announcement today, I can't really explain what happened. Because I've been frustrated, and I've thought we've needed a new manager for a little while now. And I've always tried to be respectful when I've made that point or when I've given that point of view. I've never been abusive of Arsene Wenger. I've never been one of those people who calls him names or denigrates the things that he has done for this club. I've always been very appreciative of the good times that he's shown us. But when that announcement was made today, like Andrew said, there was like hairs go up on the back of your neck. And you realize, I think, that the frustrations are short term. And when we look back on the 22 years that Arsene Wenger has spent in charge of Arsenal Football Club, I think we'll look back on them with real pride. Because he did things and won things and represented our club in a brilliant way. Not everybody is going to feel like that. Not everybody has to feel like that. I'm not prescribing that point of view. But personally, as much as I've wanted change and as much as he has frustrated me at times, he will always be somebody that I hold in great affection for what he did, for what he gave us, for the way he made me feel. So all I can say is thank you very much, Arsene Wenger. It's been a hell of a ride. And I hope that in the games that are to come between now and the end of this season, particularly in the Europa League, the players do you proud, the players do you justice, and that you leave Arsenal Football Club with a trophy lifted above your head like we saw in 1998, like we saw in 2002, like we saw in 2004, 2005, 2014, 2015, 2017. The most celebrated FA Cup winning manager of all time, two doubles, one invincible season. It's been amazing at times. It's been absolutely amazing. So let's hope that we can do that for you, and let's hope that you can do that for us, and together we can see you off into the metaphorical sunset with so much goodwill and so much love, because I think you deserve that. Thank you as ever for listening. Thanks for being here today. James and I will be here on Monday. I thought we should go out with a bit of music, and this one just seemed a little bit appropriate. So catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
You gave me more to live for, more than your
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.